The Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast is proud to be sponsored by Dr. Spork's 3D Terrain. From retro greenskin outposts to elven fortresses and obelisks, this is hands down the best nostalgic scenery you'll find out there, and all at stupidly reasonable prices. Check it out for yourself by heading over to bedroombattlefields.com/spork, that's S-P-O-R-K, and turn your tabletop into a scene from White Dwarf circa 1994. Andy Chambers not included. Brought to you by bedroombattlefields.com, this is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If I could pick any three Englishmen to come on the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast and chat about running a global narrative campaign, it would be Barry, Robin and Morris Gibb. Unfortunately, we're going to have to make do with Jason, Ed and Mark instead. All the same, they did a great job of laying this all out, and you can get involved no matter where you are in the world by joining the community at bedroombattlefields.com/discord. Alright, I'll hand you over to the lads now, starting with Mark, who was literally recording in the middle of a cow field.
So, we thought we'd get together. It's me, Mark, and Ed and Jason. We thought we'd have a chat about this fantastic global participation campaign that's going on, that's just about to launch, give you a bit of backstory about how it all came around, what we've done sort of 6 months ago and culminated in a big game in January, and how we were involved in that, and what we're planning on doing in the future. So, what happened? A few months ago, Jason decided it would be a great idea to put on one of his big games. And there's anyone who's seen one of Jason's big games, they know they are spectacular. But not content with it being just a spectacular event on the day, he thought, do you know what? I can run a campaign in the lead up to this. So we had a WhatsApp group with different channels for different teams, and we were divided up. And the players all got involved and brought together an experience that was a lot bigger than just that single day. So, Ed, do you want to just kind of give a bit of context from your players' perspective about how that all worked and what that was? And then we can kind of lead into the campaign that we're about to launch.
So I've been to a few of Jason's big games now. They're always spectacular affairs. And he decided that... leading off the last game from Boyle, where there was a big attack on the a wagon train, and a queen escaped with wizards chasing him. I'm sure Jason can give more context in a moment. That the forces of evil, in quotation marks, because this is the Warhammer world, would be attacking a dwarven stronghold where the queen was taking refuge. And so we, both sides, were sort of like separated out into different groups, and Jason gave us opportunities to take actions and make maneuvers and try some underhand tactics in advance of the game, which would then all have knock-on impact onto the game. And it worked really, really well. It was really good fun. As a Skaven player, I took every opportunity to try and come up with cunning plans. It made the game on the big game on the day back in January, it gave it a lot more gravitas. It gave it a lot more depth. Because all these other things had already happened in the run up to it. It was really, really fun.
That's really cool. I think from my perspective, one of the things that was most significant was how Jason managed to sort of shepherd the whole process in a way that I assumed at the beginning of it there'd be like lots of rules and we'd need to know what we were doing. But as players, we were really free to just kind of ask questions and do things how we wanted. So, Jason, do you want to sort of talk to that idea of how you've been running it in a, I was going to say rules light, but potentially even rules free way?
Yeah, the rules aren't really there. There's barriers, and you work within those barriers. So what I mean by that is you're on your team, you can't see what the other team's doing. That's your first barrier. And that then gives you a context within which you need to work. You need to find out what's going on the map. And so you've got a map at the beginning of the entire thing that you have for your own context, and you have the mission that your side is trying to achieve, which in this particular case for Boyle, it is get your troops to the siege area in the best order and fashion that you can, and try to prepare for that siege in the best way you can with the games every month leading up to it. So one of the ways in which you can prepare is you need food. So you need to go and have some games where you raid for food and deny the enemy food. You need to find out where that is by using your scouts. You only have 12 scouts per team. You have to decide how you use those scouts. And if those scouts survive, they keep giving you information. Now, this might sound complicated, but all the complication is on my end, because I just tell you what's going on. You ask me, can I send that scout there? What has he seen? And then you will get a report back, maybe, if the scout has survived. And a lot of this is me coordinating between two teams, because your scout might not survive because you've sent your scout over that hill and over there to go and have a look at the big tower that's in the middle of the field. And actually, the enemy have already moved an army there. So your scout's wandered into an army and been killed. But that still gives you some kind of information, because you get reported back going, we've received no word from the scout. And then you have to ask, well, why? And it's so free world and free form that it's deceptively simple, because it is literally questions and answers with boundaries. And those boundaries have been clearly set by me, the games master. So you can just go, okay, I'm in charge of the Uruk Hai. We are in the middle of the map. We're going to go straight barreling down that road towards the hold. And we want to send scouts into the woods. And we want to send scouts down the road in front of us. And we want to send scouts down into the mines to see what's going on. Is that all right, Jason? Yeah, all right. No worries. I would reply. I will let you know at the end of the month how that's gone, because it takes time to do these things. And in between, you would play games based on where your army is going. So you've sent your scouts out and you've sent your army, and you've said amongst yourselves that, all right, I need to get food. I'm going to go and raid that farm. I'm going to raid this and raid that. Now, I give two updates per month. One is at the end of the month and one is at the middle of the month. The middle of the month is me coordinating between the two teams what has happened with all of you moving at the same time. Who's clashed with who hasn't clashed? Where are you? What's going on? What's the limits of the games that you can play that you've tried to suggest to me? And then that then gives you your boundary to the games. And then you decide what you're trying to achieve with that game. And at the end of the month, I would then post on the news channel what the results of that is as a general update. But there will be specific results for specific groups, and then there will be general results, because there are some things that the enemy can't know. Otherwise, the game collapses. All of this will accumulate towards the big day in Boyle. So you keep rolling forward and you keep moving across the map slowly but surely. And some troops move faster than others, obviously, as we all know. You can't move a steam tank at the same speed as you can move light cavalry and things like this. And you will then, in the glory of the third edition book, there was that massive map of a castle being you are in the engaged zone, you are in the outer zone, you are in the combat zone, all that sort of thing. So at Boyle, I will then tell you, oh, you've managed to reach your troops into the combat zone. Well done. And you've managed to get enough food to last, and you've managed to get all the equipment for your siege, and you've managed to undermine the walls. Because, you know, in the last game, people tried to undermine the walls, didn't they, towards that last month, just before the game. They got close enough that they could do stuff that we use Dungeon Saga to try and get those things done. So that leads on to the other thing, is that when you play your games, you don't have to play Warhammer. You don't even have to play fantasy. The game is representing a decision you've made. So if you're trying to do a raid to get food, it could be Space Marines raiding some orc port to try and get their stuff. It doesn't matter. Or it could be a video game that you've played. As long as you're honest with the results to me, then that's all that matters. You play your games. You're in your way, in your choice. And you represent the forces on the map. That's all it is. It's just an abstraction.
And so. So just that one thing that people are probably listening to this thinking, well, I understand how you did that in the run-up to the January game, because you had the players who were going to be there in January in participating in the build-up and thinking, oh, okay, so I'm going to be there on the day. I mean, in my instance, I actually didn't manage to get to you on in January because I got flooded in, so I had to do something different. But how is this going to work for people who won't be able to get to Boyle on the day but want to get involved in the campaign? Are they acting on behalf of someone else? Are they in a team? Explain a bit about how that works.
Well, this comes back to what I mean by the abstraction. This is why we're representing things on that map. I have forces pre-arranged for Boyle, but there is also supplementary forces that can come along if people turn up with their own troops. And it fits with the narrative, and we can get it on the bloody table. Because the table's smaller at Boyle. It's a mere 12 by 6. we will have to... So we've got that going on.
Sorry, Jason, that's not even a half-size table for you, is it?
No, it's not, is it? No. But that means people have to turn up to our games as well, won't they? What that means, though, is that you can take part in the campaign in this fullest sense, because you are impacting what will happen on that final day. You are impacting where those troops are going. And then whoever can turn up on the day, if they've been involved with the campaign, great. It's going to be superb for you. If they haven't been involved with the campaign, well, you can watch the campaign or catch up on it or just turn up and take control of a portion of that force on their behalf. And so great. It can be a pickup game with all this weighted campaign behind it, whether you've partaken in it or not. And if you have joined in the campaign from around the world, using the abstract method that I've described, and it represents all those troops, we can then feed back to you on the day, this is what's happened as a result of your efforts. And this is what's happened with this commander that's taken over on your behalf.
Fantastic. So if someone wants to play games in this world, in the build-up to it, but they can't come to Boyle, are you saying that, you're saying it doesn't matter whether or not they're not only not playing the set of rules, but they don't even need to play the same, races or armies that you've got and that you're going to be bringing models. It's really a case of you just having to decide, is this an evil army or a good army? Or a good force or an evil force? Is that essentially the only distinction people need to make, is kind of between attackers and defenders?
There is one more distinction. And that is, when you suggest to me the type of scenario that you're trying to play and what you're trying to achieve with your game, irrespective of whether it's using Halo on the Xbox or whether it's using some abstract board game, whatever, it may be that because of the maneuvers that have been going on, that I have to tell you, oh, I'm so sorry, but you are outnumbered 2-1.
Right.
Because the enemy have managed to outmaneuver you and got more resources there. So when you play your game, whatever you need to do, represent it as 2-1. So with Halo, for instance, if that's what you were playing, I'd say you are going all the way up to the hardest possible level. So you're putting it right up to full and then trying to do the capture the tank scenario on those levels or whatever it is. Do you see what I mean? So we would tailor it slightly based on what's happened on the map. So if you're playing Space Marines versus Orcs in my little quick off-the-cuff scenario earlier to raid the farm, the Orc farm, all that fungus that you want to harvest, and the Space Marines have suddenly found themselves, oh my goodness, the Orcs are twice in number, they knew we were coming, then when you play your game, whatever models you've got, I'd say you need just to make sure that you're 2-1 ratio. So that, if that means you have to halve your Space Marines, then halve your Space Marines. If that means you can double your Orcs, if you've got it in your collection, then double your Orcs. And that's what happens.
Perfect. So really, it's people can kind of do it in any way, shape or form they want to. I know last time you did do some games down near you, didn't you, in the build-up to things to resolve stuff. You mentioned about using Dungeon Saga. So is this... Were they the only games that were being played in the previous campaign? I can't remember off the top of my head, in the run-up.
Because we were testing it, we kept it quite simple. There was another group of people who played a game on our behalf. But that was it. It was just us in the club and this other side of the group, this other group that played a couple of games. And that's scalable though. That's why we trialed it, because I knew I could scale that to more people and more groups. They just need to tell me what the result is.
Cool, fantastic. Well, one of the questions that we got that came in, we asked on the Discord for people who were kind of curious about questions. One of them was, what's the world that it's set in? And I think some people, they'll really, you know, they won't want to play Halo or Space Marines versus Orcs. They'll want to play something that's very thematic to the story you're telling. So between the two of you, do you want to give a bit of an overview of how it's the Warhammer world, but maybe not quite exactly as you might recognize it straight out of the book?
Ed, would you mind if I just penciled it out and then you colored it in?
That sounds like a good plan to me.
Okay. So it is indeed Warhammer, but it's Warhammer with, as Mark said, all the brakes are off. So it's in the original sense of Warhammer, which is a portmanteau universe, but encapsulated within the maps and the loose definitions that Rick Priestley set out originally. So what it is we are the Empire. It is Talabekland that is the forces that are taking part alongside some dogs of war. But they have a province of their own up in the north where the last incursion of chaos left the Kislevites not capable of taking care of these lands, which are very close to the Norse lands and that sea that's just below the Norse lands. We're on that coast. And we are operating between Talabekland and that province, which has been basically taken over by Talabekland in my little story, because the Kislevites can't really operate there anymore. They haven't got enough people to keep the land going. A wizard does not like this, a rogue wizard up in the north. He's semi-chaotic, we shall say. He's Saruman-esque, and he has built his own army of orcs and goblins, the Uruk-hai, which are represented by orcs and goblins army lists, and work exactly the same way. And he has decided that he hates the count that is doing this. And so wants to do everything he can to collapse the count's power base and to counter him. And so this a particular episode that we're playing out in the Dwarf Hold follows on from a series of games that I'm sure Ed can color in a moment. And it is a continuation of that epic war between them. And the current focus is the count. It is revealed that the count is part of an ancient line of kings in that part of the empire. And they have unofficially been keeping that title amongst their own people. So his daughters are the queen of this realm, that was pre-empire realm, that's still carrying on within the empire, sort of like what has happened in the British Empire, that the kings and queens continued on despite the fact that they have grown in stature and stance beyond that of just the United Kingdom. They've kept that old title, even though there are people more powerful than them now within the realms. And the count, when he takes up his position as count of Talabekland and its provinces, can no longer be king. So the daughters have taken the role of queen. And the wizard has decided that he's going to capture these people and deal with them. So that's the overall world. But there are things like stargates and rogue traveling interdimensional wizards that cause problems. But it is very much foundationally Warhammer, because we can bring in basically any fantasy race as long as it fits the story. So we can have the chaotic elements coming down from the Norse lands and indeed chaos. And we can have the Skaven and the Under Empire working here and the dwarves, and that's what we're doing. And Ed, did you want to colour in how that's all working?
I mean, I think you've given a pretty good description of the whole situation. So really from my perspective, when we started all this and a couple two or three years ago now, and Jason initially said, who wants to come and play a big game of Warhammer? The three of us plus another member from the Discord all kind of got together and played a big game, and it was more or less just Warhammer lore. And over the times that we've got together and played, and I think we've played about half a dozen of these big games now, more lore has just been added over time. So the way I see it is, it's our Warhammer world. So we've taken what was given, and over the games that we've been playing, these other elements have been added, such as the ones that Jason has described there. One of the elements which Jason touched on, which I think is a very fun element and it's a very us element, is the Wild Wizard, that the very famous Jeff, who has been turning up in games for the last sort of 12 months, 18 months, and just been causing absolute carnage. And Jeff is a character that came out of chats on the Discord. So really, it is the Warhammer world, but it's the Warhammer world of the bedroom battlefields. And that we have all kind of contributed towards in sort of sometimes a very small minor ways. The name Jeff comes from my wife's second cousin. The fact that she calls all my models Jeff. So, you know, that's a little contribution that came through. And I know that there are lots of other people who have had similar small contributions, but all those little contributions that we've all made have added up into creating what is, a personalized, sort of bespoke version of the Warhammer setting, which, you know, is great fun to play in, because although it's the same Warhammer world and, you know, we can talk about the Skaven and the Orcs and the Empire and all of these things, so that people who have not already played in this setting will know the broad strokes, you also get to kind of contribute and add on top of the lore that we've been building over the last 2 or 3 years, which is, for me, very rewarding.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think that the way that you both described that, it's very much around that philosophy that Rick Priestley talks about. Often you'll hear him talk about that idea of leaving open doors when he was building mm-hmm. this world, so that people can kind of go off, explore their own things, make their own Space Marine chapters, come up with their own provinces of the Empire, whatever it might be, all that kind of thing. And you're right, that emergent way of building a story through each individual person's contributions in a community like ours, where, you know, it's all, there's a lot of silly jokes and a lot of fun and lightheartedness. You know, it is a bit incoherent, it is a bit mad and rambling, but that's all part of the fun. So I think if anyone's looking at this and thinking this campaign sounds great, but it sounds a bit woolly, I think, Jason, you'd be the first to say it is, but that's a good thing. That's why it's fun, because you can kind of get involved in whatever way, shape or form you want, to whatever extent you want. It doesn't matter if you don't really need a lot of time to get involved in this. So if anyone's kind of thinking, oh, I think it sounds like a bit much, because some war games campaigns are a big, big ask, then, you know, this doesn't have to be that, does it?
No, but I also think, like, when you say woolly, I think the reason it can be that little bit woolly is because we do have Jason as the GM.
Yeah.
As the impartial law keeper, who is able to put balance in there manually. You know, when we play tabletop war games, we have, you know, these complex rule systems in some cases, particularly something like Warhammer, to provide the balance that Jason can provide. So I think having that dedicated person who can look at all the ideas we're throwing at him and go, right, okay, well, these things are going to conflict and these things are going to go off and do their own thing, and can give direction. It's like with role-playing games, as you know, I've done a lot of GMing in role-playing games, and you can have very rules-like systems that feel like they have, you know, a lot of solidity and depth if your GM can manage them correctly. I think that's very much what Jason does.
Do you mind if I jump in there?
Yeah, go.
Yeah, please do.
I'm concerned. I wouldn't describe it as woolly. I'd describe it. I would describe it as full imagination that hits a boundary.
Yeah.
I'm the boundary, and I'm making sure that you can have full, you know, if you want to bring your army of gnomes that appears, we will allow you to bring your army of gnomes. I mean, it's no problem, but you will find that that army of gnomes is going to be hitting the boundaries properly. So you can have fun with it. It's just that you'll find that when your gnomes come up against Uruk-hai, strength 2 against strength 4, and they're very scared, that will happen. It's not going to be fully woolly. It's just going to be, is it possible? And does it fit with the campaign and the rules of the campaign through me? You don't have to know any of it. It's just, oh, you've attempted this. Sorry, it hasn't worked. And that's not me being arbitrary. That is me making sure that the game is a game to be won, and that you can, as a player, can still be fully participating in your imagination with it. So it might feel woolly because so far we've been pretty good at allowing people's imaginations to run and work. But there is definitely me going, okay, you can absolutely do that. Here's your limitations.
So it's that sense of, rather than it being realistic, it's a sense of things being plausible, isn't it, really? You're just kind of looking at everything through a lens of saying, does this feel plausible, and does it contribute positively to the story, I suppose? By positively, I don't mean good fortune. What I mean is, does it add something of value, or is it taking us off in a direction that's unwieldy, in which case you need to put that barrier in and bring it back?
Can I give a little example from a previous game we played?
Good idea.
So this wasn't technically part of a campaign, but this, I think, is the sort of thing that could potentially happen in a campaign. We played about this time last year, we played a big naval game where a bunch of us made 28mm scale ships, essentially sort of a man of war style at 28mm. And we had a race to the island. And I said to Jason in the lead up, I'm bringing Skaven, and hidden amongst my Skaven is an assassin. And my assassin has a different agenda to what everyone else has going on. I'd like him to be trying to, you know, do assassin-y stuff. And Jason turned around to me and went, okay, that's fine. You can do that. I will direct you to what your assassination target will be. And depending on the results, you know, you could have this, you could have an outcome where it goes really well for you, or it goes really badly for you. If it goes well and you take out your assassination, the Great Horned One comes down and he transports your assassin to the end destination. I wasn't able to get into the final objective because there were other things that needed to be done other than just arrive at the island. But it enabled me to do something that other players weren't expecting, that brought a unexpected narrative to the game. And I think that's really what the campaign kind of does in a slightly bigger scale in the lead up to it all, where you can turn around and go, I've got a cunning plan, and I'm going to talk to Jason and say, look, I want to do this sort of thing. This is the sort of outcome I'm looking for. What do I need to do to achieve that? And then Jason will give you parameters. And you take those parameters and you put them on the game system you want. And then you report back and go, look, this is the outcome of the game that I played. And Jason goes, right, okay, that's brilliant. This is the result of that outcome. And this is what is the opportunities that are now open to you. And you kind of like build on new opportunities or turn away from closed doors if things go wrong. Does that kind of make sense?
I think so. So when it comes to our actual campaign, though, I will be very strict on when I communicate, because the point of the groups is that you guys amongst yourselves on your teams can chat, you can shove ideas at each other, have a bit of fun with it, play your games, whatever else. Every 2 weeks, and the first month will be obviously three, times within the month, not just two, because I'll kick off things on day one. And then 2 weeks later, I will give updates that are specific to what's happened. And then at the end of the month, I will take your orders that you want to do for the following month's games. Now, each month, you can play one big battle for the group, and then a couple of smaller games. Now, that big battle can be represented by all of you playing your own battles, and then we have an aggregate result. So what I mean by that is, say you can't all get together to play the big battle. There is a big, referencing the map that we presented on our introduction pieces that Mark put together. If you look at that map, there's a woods, Poinier Stard Woods, I think it's called. And if you want to say, I'm going to attack that woods, but there are three, and I tell you that there are now a massive amount of enemy forces on that woods as well, then each group could play their own games, knowing that they're playing a big game for the Battle for the Woods, in using whatever system they want. And if on the attackers, there are seven wins that are reported back to me, and on the defenders, there are five wins that are reported back to me, well, then the attackers have won.
Right.
And we can move forward. That way, everyone can play whatever they want. And if everyone is playing raid scenarios for food, because each side is short of food and you need to get food ready for the siege because it will have an effect, then it would be exactly the same system. It would just be, okay, you're playing this in your own houses, in your own places in the world. 16 reports of wins on the evil side, 24 reports of wins on the good side. The good side have won the majority of the food. And we go forward from there. And I will give you prompters that are relevant as we go on. So what I mean by prompters are things like, and Ed and Mark will remember this. Sir, reports are coming from the underholds that there are dead bodies of dwarves. And that's it. That's all you'll get. And
so it's just little teasers.
Well, and they're actually happening because this is because the enemy have put someone in the underholds of the dwarf hold. They're doing nasty things and killing sentries whilst they're doing nasty things because they're in there. And you don't know that as the defenders, but you do notice when people die. So I do need to tell you that someone is dead down there. And it's up to you whether you send scouts or send a force down there and find out. Now, in this particular example, on the last campaign, no one bothered, did they?
No, we just thought, rats in the walls, ignore it.
Yeah, and the rats were definitely in the walls, and they came up through the tunnels, and they caused carnage.
Because Ed managed to get an army of rats down in the underhalls, and no one bothered to look, and it was slowly building up over the course of the months, and no one bothered to look. So when it came to the big day, an army of rats attacked from the underhalls.
The Mini Gamer is a free weekly email newsletter where I curate five cool things that caught my eye in the hobby this past week. Subscribe today and have the next edition sent straight to your inbox by going to bedroombattlefields.com/email. That's bedroombattlefields.com/email. And now back to the show.
I have to say, Jason, it was one of those things where every time you gave the orders, I was sat and gave feedback. I was sat there going, are they going to notice me? Are they going to notice what I'm doing? Like, there was a real tension there from my perspective of, surely, like, I've left bodies. I've left evidence that I've been there. Like, surely someone's going to do something at this point. And they didn't. You know, and it was, yeah, it was, there's this kind of, having it in two, you know, you're blind where you can only hear and see what your side are doing. It was, you know, what are the other side doing? What are they prepping? What traps are they going to be? What, you know, what's their disposition of the forces going to be? What am I going to come up against? And it was just, you know, a lot of this kind of like unknown, but which provided a really interesting tension to the whole campaign leading up to it. And then when I got there on the day and saw, you know, the arraignment of forces, and you told me where I was going to be setting up and all of this, it was like, okay, this has all come together, and I can see how our plan from, you know, the different sides of the attacking forces has come together, and now we're all in place and we can all kind of like launch into this, you know, greater game.
But I made sure that the defenders had an opportunity to intervene.
Mm. Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Because
there was definitely opportunity. You could sense that.
If they did intervene, then that battle would have been very different, because you wouldn't have had anywhere near the opportunity that you had.
No, absolutely not. I mean, as I say, that the Skaven forces, we were able to deploy a large army into the Underhall, and the initial plan went wrong, and we came up with a secondary plan. But even the secondary plan wouldn't have come off if we didn't have that larger force there. In order to have the impact that we had. I really think that having been attacked from the outside and the inside at that last siege game made a big difference to it. You know, it immediately put all the defenders right on the back foot.
What I like about these elements, which I'm going to give another one more element that happened in the last one to give a context of the sort of thing that players can do, and please do invent your own tactics that you want to throw into this. Mark said, Jason, I want to hire some ogres and get them to go to the enemy and pretend to offer themselves for hire to them. So these unit of ogres suddenly appeared with the attacking forces offering their services as hired mercenaries. And I, as the GM, just went to the attacker and said, oh, this game, you've stumbled across some ogres. Would you like to hire them to use in this game, and they'll stick with you to the final siege? Now, the attackers said, yes, we'll hire them. And what they were was Mark's secret mole, and they were turncoats. And on the final day, with the signal that Mark gave me, I think it was, what was it, turn three?
No, yeah.
Someone gave
like that.
On turn three, they said, all right, they're turning coats now. The ogres switched sides, and I said, no, you've lost control of them, I'm afraid. They're actually double agents. They're working for the defenders. And so these ogres were causing havoc in the middle of the attacking force, because no one questioned it. No one brought anything up. Now, other times, they are genuinely mercenaries, and you get the opportunity. But on this occasion, Mark decided, no, I'm going to pay my resources to get that over there and see if they take the bait. And they took it.
And it's stuff like that that, you know, you can do that in a game with like a flip of a card or a fake deck or that type of stuff, which is great. But to do it where the seed has been sown a couple of months before and it pays off somehow is a little sweeter, isn't it? In terms of, because I wasn't there on the day, but people were sending me updates and going, oh, look what's just happened. These ogres have turned. And I was thinking, oh, fantastic. You know, it's like to get that payoff. It's really cool to have that happen. I really enjoyed just knowing that moment paid off in the end.
But Mark, it was a knife-edge decision because I had already decided the parameters of that. Ogres aren't very intelligent.
So they could have just like forgotten that they were even double agents.
No, what I decided was if the enemy asked them...
Are you a spy?
No, if they just said, where have you come from? Why have you come here? They would have told them. But no one asked.
So there's a lesson for everyone in there is don't hire ogres without references. So, I mean, just to sum up really, because this is great and it gives loads of flavor. So if people have listened to this and thought, do you know what? I am interested in this. I mean, we've already had loads of people get involved. I think we're up to about 35 people across the two teams, which is brilliant, brilliant. So if anyone else wants to get involved, there's a poll on the Bedroom Battlefields Discord on the Global Campaign News channel. You just need to hop on that, say whether you're on the evil or the good side, and we'll allocate you into the teams. And the teams are locked down on Discord, so it'd be like a locked channel that only you and your co-teammates are in. Jason can see both, and that's it. And then we're going to launch those on Sunday, the 19th of April. And that will give sort of till the end of April, so like 11 days, just to settle in before you kick everything off on 1st of May. Is that right?
Correct. There's one other element that I would say. The part of that getting everyone settled in is you'll have some basic information for you guys to talk over.
You'll okay.
have the forces known that you're what's being represented on the map and where they are.
Right.
And you will, if no one minds, I would like three commanders from each team to represent the forces, because they'll be split into three groups on each side on the map, because they're in three different places on each map. So there's three different places that there are defending forces, and there are three different places that are attacking forces. Now, everyone can break that down however they want, and everyone can make their own decisions, you know, because those forces can be subdivided however you want. You don't actually have to formalize this. It could just be, I'm part of a group. I'm going to do stuff for myself. I don't care what the commander's saying. But when it comes to orders time, if you've had 2 weeks to chat amongst yourselves and get a sense of what orders you want, the three people, they're the ones that tell me.
Yeah, just so streamlines things, and you know that you're just waiting on six individual communications at each juncture point, aren't you? Then three from the good, three from the bad, and then that's done. So it keeps it simple for you.
But that's for the big orders. That's for where the forces are going and what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, big global stuff. Yeah.
But those little points that we've talked about secret missions with scouts, secret missions with ogres, secret missions of I want to go and attack that farm, do it. You can only do it where your forces are, if you see what I mean. If you're within touching distance, if you're going past it, if you can get there within a couple of days travel, that kind of thing. And that's where you can ask me questions, you know, and I might or might not answer you dependent on whether it was something you would know, you know, and that's fine. But when it comes to actual orders, for clarity's sake, for big army movements over the map, it would be just three commanders.
Amazing stuff. So just to close out then, really, what are you waiting for? If you've listened to this and thought that sounds pretty good, hop on there and join us, because really is the more the merrier, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no limit to this.
Fantastic. And from your perspective, Ed, you know, you really got a lot out of it before, and I bet you're looking forward to this 2.0 version of it.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. And, you know, someone's got to try and stop the Skaven from Skavening. That's all I'm saying. Last couple of games I've played in, we've just wrought destruction all over the place. Someone's got to stop me, please.
You're sprouting whiskers as you speak.
So it's, one thing that come to mind.
Yeah.
That's okay. If people feel like, oh, but we're putting all this effort in for over the 3 months and we can't be there.
Yes.
If you maneuver your forces in such a way that there has to be a second battle somewhere else on that map, that's significant to the overall result of Boyle. Say you've kept half of the defenders locked in Manlingville. They couldn't get down to the Dwarf Hold. And you want to run a big game in America, say, or in Australia, wherever you guys are, that represents what you've been building towards on that map. Do it.
Cool. Like another theatre of the battle, a theatre of the war going on simultaneously.
And it will be simultaneous, because we'll say, all right, when we're at Boyle, tell us how it's going. Because it might be that it matters, because there are special portals within the bed. Can Jeff get into the portal and get onto our table by turn four or before Sunday? But Jeff is locked in Manlingville. Can the people at Manlingville get Jeff through that bloody portal? And that kind of thing.
And there's multiple models of Jeff floating around with multiple colour schemes and clothing styles. So the idea of him appearing multiple times all at once is perfectly plausible, isn't it?
Yep. And as a final thing, final thing from me.
Yeah.
Anyway, open call to the Crown of Command Discord blokes. And gals and everyone, anyone that wants to join in, or everyone on the Crown of Command Discord, all of you guys. If you want to push your table to our table to make it a 24x6, I'm open to that, guys.
I have already spoken to Clem and sort of suggested that their table might want to have some kind of interaction with our table, whether that's increasing the table size or having another game that's having impact on our game as well.
And it can
conversations have already begun, Jason.
Well, we don't have to decide now because it can evolve in the campaign because we might not know.
Absolutely.
How to look.
Absolutely. Oh, fantastic. Well, thanks so much, guys. It's been good fun to chat about it. And I can imagine there's people listening to this thinking, it sounds crazy. It sounds bonkers. It sounds unfeasible. It sounds like a stupid idea. I'm in. And in which case, just sign up now.
Absolutely. Cheers, guys. I really appreciate you joining me on this.
Cheers, guys. See you then.
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.
Is that cow too loud?
Don't think any cow can ever be too loud.